The problem that we are encountering is that some of our friends have decided that they want to go around the rules.
The United States stands firm on North Korea sanctions. It's Monday, July 23rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Air China has lost some altitude following an e-cigarette incident. New challenges face Rohingya. A new blood test detects skin cancer. Suicide on the rise. And an old pagoda standing tall. It's all on today's VOA Asia. After a meeting at the United Nations with his South Korean counterpart and UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is calling on the international community to fully enforce sanctions against North Korea. Pompeo said the United States will need to see concrete actions from Pyongyang before the sanctions can be eased. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made a strong appeal to the international community to maintain pressure on North Korea until Kim Jong-un follows through on promises he made to President Donald Trump during the Singapore summit to start the process of fully verified denuclearization.
Strict enforcement of sanctions is critical to our achieving this goal. Members of the UN Security Council, and by extension all UN member states, have unanimously agreed to fully enforce sanctions on North Korea, and we expect them to continue to honor those commitments.
Pompeo and the U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, warned that North Korea is trying to get around the sanctions, smuggling petroleum products into the country by sea at levels that exceed what is allowed under international sanctions.
The problem that we are encountering is that some of our friends have decided that they want to go around the rules. You saw that there was violations of the oil ban.
Some experts tell VOA that China has a very consistent but very bad record on imposing sanctions.
We do need, therefore, to also pressure China to maintain the sanctions that they have imposed, because those are the ones that are going to most meaningfully hurt North Korea and keep them at the table and keep them conforming to their own commitments.
On Thursday, Russia and China moved to block the U.S., putting a six-month hold on a request to ban further fuel shipments to Pyongyang. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find currently trending on voanews.com. U.S. military sees change in North Korea, others skeptical. Japan suffers deadly record heat wave. World first melanoma blood test developed in Australia. In Senegal, China's Xi pledges stronger Africa ties. The CIA says China is waging a quiet kind of Cold War against the United States. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia, and also stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You may have heard China's aviation regulators suspended the licenses of the pilot and co-pilot of an Air China Boeing 737 that dropped more than 3,000 meters during a July 10th flight from Hong Kong to Dalian. The co-pilot, smoking an e-cigarette, mistakenly switched off the air conditioning, and that caused a sudden loss of depressurization and the deployment of oxygen masks. No injuries were reported. The Civil Aviation Administration of China also ordered a cut of 10% of the carrier's 737 flights for a three-month safety review and fined the carrier the equivalent of $7,500. The Boeing aircraft account for about 40% of Air China's fleet. Jeffrey Cheng is an aviation and shipping analyst with the Hong Kong-based Bank of Communications of China. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty the CAAC action is having an impact on the airline's schedule.
They will have to cut 10% of the, B737 flights as well, equivalent to roughly about a cut of 5,400 hours of flight time for that particular class of aircraft.
Why are they cutting the aircraft when this was just a one-off incident involving one crew?
Well, it seems like the CAAC think that there is something the management should have prevented and things like that. So eventually that penalty is kind of creep up to the company level. But besides that, actually the co-pilot as well as the pilot, the license has been suspended. The one that actually light the smoke had actually been cancelled, and according to the press, that reapplication will not be entertained by CAAC as well for that particular pilot.
Has anything like this happened before?
I haven't seen that. I've been covering the sector for almost like 10 years. No, as far as my memory goes, no, that hasn't happened before. But as you know, electric smoke is something quite brand new, right, these days.
What is Air China's safety record?
That's not bad. Actually, in the past 10 years, I haven't seen any major incidents, things like that.
What is this going to do to Air China's business?
Our estimate is kind of small because Air China actually has a fleet by the end of last year, roughly about 655 aircraft. They have around 269 aircraft of 737 series. And so it's roughly about one-third of that. 5,400 hours, according to our estimate, is roughly about 6% of the potential flight hours of that particular class of say aircraft per month for Air China. Similarly, as you know, they have also the Airbus, a similar class, similar size, like A320. They have around 200 of them. So what we are thinking is that, firstly, they probably will possibly redeploy some of the Airbus in place of the B737 in case of need. Secondly, as you know, for any airline and as well within the network, there must be some flights that probably not making money. So it would be a good time for them to look at their network and say, hey, yeah, if we are cutting our, say, service hours, then what about we cut several flights as well, because in any case, this flight would be making losses. So so combining these customers with other flights and things like that will probably be positive to the company. So our estimate is that in terms of the capacity, things like that, it will probably be an impact less than 2% in a particular month.
The incident comes at a bad time for Air China as airlines struggle with a falling yuan and rising fuel costs. Its shares fell over 1% in Hong Kong last week. Happening now in Asia, Indonesian police said Sunday a 15-year-old girl who was raped by her older brother has been sentenced to 6 months in jail for having an abortion. The brother received a 2-year sentence for having sex with a minor. Their mother is also facing charges because she helped abort the fetus. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're starting out a brand new week, and we're glad you're with us on VOA Asia. For Rohingya refugees living in New Delhi, each day comes with a new set of challenges. A relief camp on a forbidden parcel of land in the eastern part of the Indian capital measures less than 100 square meters. The refugees there live in constant fear of eviction and the threat from both fire and water. VOA's Rital Joshi takes a look at the plight of these stateless refugees in New Delhi.
Even before one sets foot in this Rohingya camp in the Kalindi Kunj neighborhood of Delhi, a huge poster proclaims that refugees do not belong here. This land is the property of the northern Indian state of Uttar Pradesh. Rohingya refugees like Kabir were forced to move here in April when a big fire destroyed their original relief camp.
There is nothing left but our lives. Everything I had earned in the past 6 years was burnt. Not even close.
Back then, the Rohingya refugees lived in tarpaulin tents on a piece of land owned by the Zakat Foundation, a Muslim non-profit organization. After the fire, the foundation started building tin and asbestos homes to house the refugees, only to learn later that about 110 meters of the planned camp was the property of Uttar Pradesh state. Construction remains suspended, pending legal determination of ownership.
The subdivisional magistrate requested us to let these people remain here until demarcation is done. On his request, we have put these people here, which is not easy from the point of view of construction. It also makes things difficult for the refugees.
The foundation pays about $146 per day to keep the tents here. It's a big financial burden for the organization and a danger for the refugees who live their lives amid exposed wires and plastic sheets, the main culprits causing the first fire. Despite the fire risks, Rohingyas say they are more worried about the coming monsoon rains.
When it rains, water enters our tents from all sides. All our belongings, including food, gets wet.
On humanitarian grounds, we want these people to live comfortably here. There are a lot of little children here. We don't want any harm coming to them.
For the almost 250 Rohingya refugees who live inside the disputed camp, harm remains a constant and daily companion, even as they wait for the elusive promise of shelter and security. Ritul Joshi for VOA News, New Delhi.
Coming up, protecting your skin with blood. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news from VOA Asia. Japan is in the midst of a record-breaking deadly heat wave. Scores of people have died with the rising temperatures, and thousands have been rushed to the hospital across the country. Officials are advising people to be sure to drink water and find air conditioning in an effort to avoid heat stroke. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day. See and share our stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, scientists in Australia say they've developed the world's first blood test to detect melanoma in its early stages. It's hoped the technique will save hundreds of lives each year by identifying cancer cells before they spread. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney, where Australia and neighboring New Zealand have the highest rates of skin cancer in the world.
Currently, skin examinations and biopsies are the most effective ways to detect melanoma. A blood test developed by university researchers in Western Australia could pick up the cancer much sooner, increasing a patient's chances of survival. The test recognises autoantibodies that are part of the body's natural defences against cancer. In a trial involving about 200 people, the technique detected the early stages of skin cancer in more than 80% of cases. Professor Mel Zeiman is the head of the Edith Cowan University Melanoma Research Group.
We're hoping that it will reduce the number of people that get metastatic disease, because that's where it becomes tricky. If a thin melanoma is identified early and it's removed, you have a 98 to 99% chance of 5 to 10-year survival. So that's what we're hoping to achieve, is that people will feel more comfortable going for skin checks. So it will just up the number of people that are aware and able to get their melanoma identified earlier.
Malignant melanoma is the most serious form of skin cancer. It's mainly caused by exposure to UV radiation. In Australia, about 1,500 people die from the disease each year. More clinical research on the new Australian blood test is planned in an attempt to improve its accuracy to 90%. The technique could be available within 5 years. Researchers have said the test won't pick up other types of skin cancers, such as squamous cell and basal cell carcinoma. Other health experts have said the results of the trial need to be interpreted with caution. They've urged people to keep checking their skin as a way to detect the early signs of skin cancer. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In or out of the sun, more women drivers are taking to the streets. Dozens of girls in Afghanistan's northern city of Mazar-e-Sharif have lined up to take their driving test. They've defied social norms that prohibit females driving by joining the driving class and trying to get their driving licenses. Women rights advocates say driving is a major part of independence for men. VOA's Mirwais Bejin visited one training session and has this report narrated by Bejin Hamdard.
Women are seen in the streets of Mazar-e-Sharif driving cars. It is unusual to see women driving in the city. In this driving test session, 50 girls showed up to complete a month-long class. These new drivers say driving is a step toward self-reliance and independence.
In my opinion, this is a great opportunity for women to learn how to drive. I think everyone should encourage women to drive instead of, God forbid, say bad things.
The problems that women face while driving, people often say negative things. They should support women more.
This is the first time women have gotten assistance from the local traffic administration, the Women Affairs Administration, and a private organization to finish their driving classes. Rohsar Nuri got the support of her parents in learning to drive. That is rare in her hometown, where the conservative Afghan society frowns on female drivers.
We women often demand equality so that we can play a bigger role in our society. We say that we are half of the community, and in order to make that happen, we have to fight against taboos.
Women rights advocates say the taboo makes women dependent on men in their social life.
There are certainly problems that women can't comfortably go out and drive. One of the main issues is the existing of old traditions and taboos that have prevented women from driving.
Last year, 300 women received their driver's licenses to become first Afghan women drivers in northern Afghanistan. For Mirais Bejan in Mazar-e-Sharif, Afghanistan, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
This news from VOA Asia. Physicians for Human Rights, a group of doctors working with Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh, say medical and scientific evidence indicates the extent of the violence the refugees suffered at the hands of the Myanmar military and civilians as they fled from violence. There's much more on all the day's stories at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the suicide rate in the United States is rising. A new government report shows nearly 45,000 Americans killed themselves in 2016. That's twice the number of homicides. In fact, the suicide rate, particularly among young people between the ages of 15 to 34, has been rising at an alarming rate for almost three decades, well before the recent high-profile suicides of designer Kate Spade and celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain. Reporter Daria Digitz takes a look at the societal trend that has many health professionals worried.
Glory, fame, and money are not recipes for happiness. The untimely deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain at their own hands reveals that the public perception of success can be deceptive. It also points to a disturbing and growing reality in America.
Deep existential questions about what is life about, is it worth living, would I choose to end my life, are thoughts that many, many people have. So then when you see somebody like one of these celebrities that actually does that, then it becomes quite real.
Worse, say experts, is that celebrity suicides can be contagious. Suicides by well-known personalities can trigger copycat suicides, also called the Werther effect, named after a fictional character written in the 18th century by J.W. von Goethe. After Goethe's young protagonist killed himself, dozens of European readers followed suit. A similar thing happened in 2014, after American actor Robin Williams took his own life. More recently, suicide hotlines reported a 65% spike after Spade's and Bourdain's deaths.
If the method is popularized, we have shown over and over and over that that method will spike when the suicide is in the news for about 4 months afterwards. It's very important not to say much about the method.
Leah Harris did not have any celebrity role models when she started having suicidal thoughts at the age of 7. She admits she made several attempts on her life until doctors prescribed antidepressants. But she says medication doesn't always work.
A lot of people who die by suicide were already receiving care and treatment, including medication. And the medication issue is one that is extremely controversial in this society. But I can tell you that I myself experienced being on SSRI antidepressants as a child and adolescent. It definitely magnified my suicidal thoughts and feelings.
One in six Americans take some sort of antidepressants. But the Center for Disease Control say mental illness account for only half of all suicides. Other leading causes include bad relationships, financial hardships, and substance abuse.
We're largely focused on people who have an identified mental health condition, which, as the CDC report showed, that that's just only about half of the people that attempt suicide or who may die by suicide.
It's a problem experts say will only get worse if not addressed. Suicide is now the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. And as so many are starting to understand, it's a problem that neither fame or financial success can cure. Daria Digutz for VOA News, Washington.
21st century technology has helped restore an 18th century Chinese pagoda in the heart of London. VOA's Faith Lapidus has the story.
When the Chinese pagoda in Kew Gardens was completed in 1762, it was the second tallest building in England. Designed by architect William Chambers, who made several visits to China, the tiered tower stood nearly 50 meters high, with 80 colorful, snarling dragons perched on the roofs of its 10 stories. Polly Putnam, curator of historic royal palaces, says 18th century Londoners were horrified.
So Westerners had never seen Chinese architecture like this before. And so it blew their minds because it was so different to anything Chinese that they'd ever experienced.
While pagodas are traditionally used as places of worship, the Georgian royal family used the structure to entertain visitors and share views of London. But about 20 years after its completion, the pagoda's wooden dragons disappeared. No one is sure of the true explanation.
What I think happened was actually they were 20 years old. Britain was in a mini ice age at the time. So there was an awful lot of frost. There was an awful lot of storms. There was even a volcano which erupted in 1783, covering London in smoke. 20,000 people died. And so the year after, I can imagine that the dragons were looking pretty shabby.
A restoration project began in 2014 to return the pagoda to its former glory. Experts consulted original design drawings, paintings, and a book written by Chambers. To ensure the new dragons wouldn't succumb to the elements, they were 3D printed. South Carolina-based 3D Systems used a process called precision laser sintering to produce 72 new dragons. The 8 serpent-like creatures on the lowest roof were hand-carved and painted by master craftsmen. Each dragon took about 18 hours to print, using a durable nylon material.
It's a perfect use, really, because it solves a lot of problems. We've got to make it lightweight, which means hollowing the part, but we still need to build internal structures into the dragon, which is very difficult, almost impossible to do any other way. 3D printing is a very fast way of making very complicated, unique pieces. There are 18 versions of a dragon on the building. So we can manage all that and print it very, very efficiently. And we can scale up on the printing side as well to make sure it's done to the program.
The result is like stepping back to an earlier time in a royal garden that is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Such a great story, and as with many of our stories that you hear on VOA Asia, you can find them online. They're on our website at voanews.com with great video to go with it. So after you've heard the story, you can actually go online and see the story. A lot of fun. We'd also love to hear from you. We have an email address. It's voaasia@voanews.com. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners, finding out what they're up to and what's going on in their part of the world, your part of the world, which we enjoy finding out about. You can also find us online. iTunes and SoundCloud are great places to get our program, as well as VOA Asia Facebook and our website, voanews.com, where we stream our program on both each day. You can also find us on great radio stations around Asia, like Voice of Chung-Rung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chung-Rung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank everyone there who's tuned in. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zineb Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.